As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello, this is the Athletic Football Tactics Podcast, and this week we're going to talk about a team with 24 wins in 29 league games and just one defeat. That's Internazionale in Serie A. We'll talk about why their tactics are so noteworthy and why their manager Simone Inzaghi deserves a little more rispetto on his name in the discussion about the best football managers in world football. I'm Ali Maxwell. Joining us to do this, he's here. Liam Tharm.
Hello.
He's there and everywhere. It's Mark Carey.
Hello, Ali.
Liam, Mark, you guys know about TIFO, right? TIFO football, big old tactics nerds, part of the Athletic family. You've heard of them.
Yeah, I've passed off their takes as mine for years now.
Hell, Liam, you've been on TIFO recently writing about left-footed penalties, which is just TIFO tactics perfection. Mark, I know you've done a lot of TIFO content over the years as well. Hell, even I've been on TIFO, which just shows the level of quality that they produce. It's about time that a crossover works the other way. With us today, delighted to welcome, for his debut on the Football Tactics Pod, John McKenzie of TIFO. Hi, John.
Hello, guys. How are you doing?
We are so well, and we're so happy to be joined by someone who I reckon could be described as a football tactics sicko.
Yeah, absolutely. Mainly out of possession sicko-ness, but I think that's the worst type, right?
Not for me to say. Look, this is a safe space, and particularly today we're going to talk about a team who have been incredible this season. Out of possession, yes, in possession as well. It's Inter. Liam, you've talked about them a fair bit on the pod this season, but we've saved a proper deep dive for now. Why should we be so into them and their manager, Simone Inzaghi?
Yeah, I guess a lot of this for a few people, sort of in terms of sitting up and taking notice, was the back end of last season. It wasn't just this season specifically. James Horncastle made a very good sort of prediction about them reaching the Champions League final, and they've been notoriously a very good cup team now for a while under Simone Inzaghi. But that Scudetto has sort of eluded them since the Conte days. I think when we've done podcasts before on sort of cup teams versus league teams, they've been the example of how you can be good in knockout tournaments and do well in both boxes, but not always sort of extrapolate that over a full league season. And look, Napoli were, I think, a favourite team of a lot of neutrals last season, and very rightly so. They were really good going forward. This Inter team are even better. At this stage of the season, only in 2013-14 and 2018-19, which was Juve both times, was a team on more points than Inter are on currently now. But their attack and their defence is better than both those Juve teams. So this is all better than Napoli last season. And Napoli were the first perfect champions. That's the team to win the league with the best attack and the best defence for a long time, for almost a decade in relation to Juve. And they could get close to 100 points this season if they end the season really well, which I think is really exciting. And the Serie A record is 102 from Juve in 13-14.
John, Serie A more generally feels like it's been a nice league to follow for neutrals, and in particular for people who are looking for a big European league with quite a lot of competitive balance at the top of it. Since Juve's domination was reduced. We've had a number of different winners, and Inter part of that conversation, having won the Scudetto in 2021. But this season, back at it again after Milan and then Napoli won Serie A.
Yeah, I think the story of Serie A over the last few seasons has been that there's generally been an evacuation of talent because of the financial goings on in world football. What that's done is it's made the league quite an interesting prospect for neutrals. As you said, that Juve team who people thought would never lose again has had their back broken in terms of their ability to win so comfortably all the time. Since then, we've started seeing actually some quite interesting managers coming through. Simone Inzaghi is one, but you know other managers like Spalletti really showing his tactical teeth last season. Thiago Motta this season in the league as well. And I think that's what's so fascinating about this Inter team out of that context. This has really allowed them to become quite a flexible team. They've been able to show dominance in lots of different areas, lots of different phases of play. And this is very much a team that are at top of the league because of that tactical flexibility. I think that all comes out of the fact that the league has had its dominance sort of upset a little bit by the goings on in world football.
I just want to pepper in some numbers here and use the opportunity to just bounce off what John was saying there in terms of Inter's attacking dominance, and you mentioned their variety in attack, John, but just the sheer numbers of Inter's 2.4 goals per 90, which is the only side in Italy to average more than two goals. So it shows how entertaining they are going forward. And across wider Europe, across the top five European leagues, only Arsenal, Bayern Munich and Bayer Leverkusen average more than that 2.4 goals per 90, which shows how exceptional that is. You mentioned it at the start as well, Ali, just in terms of the sheer number of games that they've won. Looking at their points per game, only Bayer Leverkusen currently tops their 2.6 points per game, which is just ludicrous, only losing one game all season and drawing four, as you mentioned. And you know, we can come on specifically onto their attack, but I think that variety is so strong. And I think as much as anything, they are both high volume and high quality as well. So they are one of the highest volume shooters. So only Napoli average more than their 15 shots per 90 minutes. But the chances that they create as well are of the highest quality in Serie A. So 0.12 XG per shot. So that's the average value of a given shot that they take is the highest in Serie A. So high quantity and high quality means for lots of entertainment and lots of goals.
And just before we get too deep into Inter's tactical specificities, I'm interested to know, as someone who doesn't watch a lot of live Serie A games, full 90s, from a tactical perspective, John, Liam, I know that you watch a fair bit, and of course, a lot of Premier League action as well, which is our bread and butter. How different do matches in both leagues look to the neutral viewer? There's always been a stereotype of Italian football as slower, the players as older, more methodical, perhaps lower scoring, lower octane. Is that completely wide of the mark, or is that to an extent the case?
I think there's been a real mix in recent seasons, and Inter probably encapsulate the good bits of all sort of the top teams. You can look at them being as defensively good as the historic Juventus teams, as sort of Mourinho's Roma. Then you look at the teams like Motta's Bologna now, or Gasperini's Atalanta, who are packed full of these rotations and these wonderful wide diamonds and triangles. And Inter are so good, and they're winning so many games because they can win it in so many different ways. I was looking earlier this season, and I wrote a piece in late January after they won the Supercoppa. This was largely sort of tied around Lautaro Martinez and how he is a individual, their number nine, their captain, is really adaptable with the strikers he plays with. But as a team, they come out either first or second. This was definitely true earlier this season. I don't have the numbers quite to hand, but for high turnover goals, for sequences of 10 plus passes in open play, for direct attacks, so a proxy, as we say, of sort of counter-attacking, they can sort of attack in so many of these different ways. There's examples last season where I think Fiorentina pressed them sort of man for man in the Coppa Italia final, and they came back from 1-0 down. And we're seeing sort of the flip side this season, where there's a lot of, and again, we're going to say that they're a very flexible attacking team, but we'll often sort of attack with five on the front line. And a lot of teams defend in a 5-3-2. Generally, a lot of Serie A teams play that anyway. A lot more play it against Inter because they want to go, you know, man for man on the back line to try and stop them. We've seen wing-back to wing-back goals. We've recently seen centre-back to centre-back goals in open play where they're both attacking in the box. It's a little bit quirky at times, but it's continued to come off and it's been really exciting to watch.
And I think as well, coming back to what we were saying before about the fact that this league is much more competitive, there's an extent to which I think with Inter, they are able to be quite reactive as well as active. And I think that's what's made them so dangerous, for example, in European competitions. They can play as a team who are going to sit with their wing-backs deep and defenders of five, or they can play with those wing-backs pressed up out of possession as well. And I think that's something that a lot of the elite teams in Europe don't really do. When we're talking about the elite teams in Europe, we're talking about teams who are very idealistic a lot of the time. They're like, this is the way that we play, and we're going to play this way and beat teams at our style. Whereas what we get with Inter is not only like are the tactics flexible, but they have the ability to. For example, against Bologna recently when they beat them, they were playing the way that they would play against opponents where they would consider themselves to be underdogs almost. And that ability to shift mode between more attacking, more aggressive, more front foot football to back foot football, where they're able to actually shift shape, is, I think, one of the reasons why they're such a hard prospect to come up against.
So, Liam, this is a 3-5-2 that's not a 3-5-2.
Definitely not. Increasingly more now, and sort of in terms of their build-up, and we'll go through at times as well some of the players they've lost in terms of, you know, repurposing midfielders now into, you look at that midfield three of Çalhanoğlu, of Barea, of Mkhitaryan, that people see as maybe lacking a little bit, well, specifically not Barea, but the other two maybe a bit in terms of athleticism. But they're really, really good technically. And it's the same with the back line. Often they'll push the middle centre-back sort of into a more advanced position, kind of into like a DM slot, which can often sort of pin a number nine and push them deeper. Or obviously if they don't get pressed, they can use that as a solution to play through. But they're really, really good at getting at least one centre-back on the outside, so the left centre-back or the right centre-back, which has often been Alessandro Bastoni, who is great because he's about 6'4", but doesn't play anything like he's that and just loves to get forward. Great final ball. Benjamin Pavard, who they signed this season and is playing, again, a similar role. So that becomes a real issue sort of against low blocks for teams to defend that way. But I love their sort of build-up. I don't know if patterns is the right word, but they've got a few ways they're prepared to get out. Bear in mind, obviously, they lost their goalkeeper, Onana, in the summer with really great long distribution. I know he's had question marks, you know, in his time at Manchester United, but anyone that watched him for Inter, especially in the Champions League, saw his quality. And Jan Sommer's been a great replacement there. He plays these really good sort of quite driven, quite flat long balls, and often they'll sort of stagger one of the number nines, either Thuram or Lautaro Martinez. One will be a bit deeper and they'll go on to the longest or the one furthest away, try and set it, and then either play through to a number eight who's running beyond, or to a wing back who already takes off. So the way I try to describe it best is almost like a volleyball move of the, you know, the ball goes forward, it gets set, and then it gets smashed all the way. And it's kind of like that, a really long up back through, if you like.
John, which of the aspects of Inter's attacking arsenal are your favourite?
The flexibility they have is just incredible. We're talking about a team that have five at the back, but very rarely will have five at the back in their build-up. And this gives them a huge amount of flexibility, both in terms of the different shapes that they can take up when they're building up. They can easily shift to a four. They can push players forward. They can have fewer players at the back if they need to. And this is the way that modern football is moving, right? It's about being able to almost cheat in your build-up so that it feels as though you've got more players at the back and more players up front. It just feels like you've got extra players. And the way that they are able to form those rotations is fantastic. Liam's mentioned that the centre-backs can sometimes go forward. You can also use the outside centre-backs pushing on if you need to as well. The centre-backs on either side can do that. So if you're a team trying to stop them from building up and you're seeing all of these positional rotations, it becomes very, very difficult to actually have a real sense of what shape they are using. They'll use the midfielders in similar ways. So you'll get Çalhanoğlu just dropping in between the two centre-backs. If you need to, that will mean Barea can drop in as well and help out. And so what ends up happening is that they have all of these really nice fluid movements which throw the opposition off when they're trying to, as particularly if they're trying to man mark. And it generates really nice ways of being able to build up through. But even with that positional fluidity, what you see is players moving into space and leaving space behind them, which is then filled by another teammate. And so you've still got these structures that you're working to, but with very different personnel in each of the slots. And it works. It looks beautiful when you watch it, because the players seem to know exactly what they're doing. And it's in a testament, I think, to Simone Inzaghi to be able to get his players so well versed in the way that they're going to move around and build up, that there's never really any gaps left open.
That's just such a feather in his cap, isn't it? Because, you know, football tactics like this, which are not basic by any means, the quality of a manager is in, of course, dreaming them up, but more importantly, being able to communicate it to players, to be able to drill it, to be not just looking good every now and then, but to be consistent within performances up against different types of opposition in different circumstances. And it's that consistency, I think, which really stands out. I think we all know of managers who are lauded for their football when it's being played at its best, but who perhaps if you really dig under the bonnet and you look a little closer, you notice that the consistency of the performance isn't quite there, that there are ways in which they get found out and they struggle to kind of paper over those cracks. But with Inzaghi's Inter, I mean, 10 wins in a row in the league before last weekend. They started the season with 5 straight. They've had 2 other runs where they've won 4 in a row. So this consistency is being made flesh in results, in points. And then on top of that, I always think another feather in a cap for any football manager is when they lose key players and the team does not suffer as a result. That again for me is clear evidence that there is a serious quality in being able to put across their ideas, being able to implement systems across various players and the team not to suffer as a result. So Andre Onana has been mentioned, but it wasn't just him that left last summer. Inter's finances are incredibly unstable and they are in a position where they have to sell key players. Milan, Skriniar left as well, Marcelo Brozovic, Edin Dzeko, of course, and Romelu Lukaku, who was such a big part of their attack last season, with Lautaro at Liam. But Lautaro's still there, and he's found himself a decent partner this time around as well.
Yeah, the Lautaro connection, as it's being called, him and Marcus Thuram, is really nice.
Sorry. Lautaro.
It fits, doesn't it? You can put their names together.
I think it looks better written down. I think it's more of a
most things that I say do sound better written down, in fairness. So they've been really good. It's interesting because sort of last season when it was Lautaro and Edin Dzeko, and I guess farther back to sort of him and Lukaku, looked more like a quintessential big guy, little guy partnership. They didn't often play like that. There's loads of times where Dzeko would run the channels. I've said loads of times on this podcast how strong and good Lautaro is back to goal, especially for his size, as Fikayo Tomori has found out on multiple occasions. But it's worked really well this season because they're a lot more similar in terms of their style. Both can sort of play that role where they drop in. Both can really run the channels really well, go 1v1. Technically, both at a really, really high level. And I think even down to the fitness or the longevity side of it, where they can both play a decent volume of minutes sort of consistently. I mean, they've got depth off the bench in terms of Alexis Sanchez and Marko Arnautovic. And that's a really big part that we're speaking about as well in terms of being able to sustain that, make rotations during competitions. I guess their flexibility was a big reason why they could work in cups before, because they can make changes to stop teams on a 1 or 2 game basis. But doing that over a season, you can't just have a good starting 11. You need that sort of consistently. And that's also shown in the way that they can combine with each other. Thuram's assisted Lautaro 4 times this season. Only Weston McKennie for Dusan Vlahovic 5 times has set up a teammate more in Serie A.
I think one thing worth noting is just how much Lautaro Martinez is running hot a little bit in front of goal this season. But I think there's interesting reasons to maybe why that might be. So he scored just over 8 goals more than his expected goals would suggest this season. He scored 23 goals in Serie A from about 15 expected goals, and no player has a larger overperformance in Europe's top 5 leagues this season. But I watched all the goals back ahead of this podcast in terms of just to try and see exactly what maybe that overperformance was. And there was a goal against Bologna at home. There was a goal against Atalanta away. And I think if you were being a goal against Salernitana away as well, all of which were kind of long range efforts. But aside from those 3, I'd probably say that the rest were just very well taken finishes. A lot of them first time, as you say, Liam, a lot of them from Thuram or just crosses in general, which I think speaks to just clinical finishing rather than, you know, if you're looking at overperformance, maybe it can be down to a bit of luck, a bit of variance, whatever. But I think that he has just been taking his efforts in really lucrative areas between the width of the penalty area and just taking them with such clinical efficiency. And I think if people who don't watch a lot of Inter were to maybe look at his penalty effort in the Champions League, they'd maybe say that's someone who's maybe not the strongest in finishing. But that was a complete outlier to how his season has been so far. He's just been very clinical in front of goal.
there was a great example of that this season away, in fact, to Salernitana. Lautaro came off the bench. I think he came on at half time. It was goalless, and he scored four goals, all four goals in the win. One was a penalty, but besides that, they were all one-touch finishes, and it just sort of showed, as Mark says, his ability to consistently get into those good positions. He's really high up now on the all-time scorers list, and as Mark pointed out, and in addition to that, about, you know, missing a penalty in a really significant Champions League game, it can be a bit of a case of recency bias, because he scored a ceiling goal in the second leg last season against Milan at San Siro to send them into the final. And he plays a lot, especially for a striker. I mean, it's not always common that they tend to play that many 90s and consistently. I think we associate it with Harry Kane quite a lot. But Lautaro can do an awful lot of high intensity. And he's sort of spoken about, obviously, the difference he has to someone like Kane is when he goes on to international duty, he's jetting probably more than halfway across the world to play in a completely different climate where it's really hot compared to Milan. And he sort of said that takes a real toll on you sort of physically and psychologically. I'm not by any means sort of absolving him of having a bad game or not doing things well. I don't imagine he thought his World Cup was any good. Again, people will judge him off of that. But I think there's sort of wider context when you look at how good he's been in the league and in big games for Inter. It's no surprise to me that their form is sort of in parallel to how well he's doing.
At the risk of derailing the conversation a little bit, on the running order we've got, it's an old school front two. And I think this is what I find so fascinating about Inzaghi in general, is that you don't find a lot of really elite coaches using striker pairings. You don't see a lot of elite coaches using 3-5-2 that we've been talking about a lot. And you know, some of the things that we've been talking about have been about how Inzaghi is quite reactive compared to active, as most elite coaches manage to be as well. And I'm kind of interested to hear what your guys' thoughts are on the fact that Inzaghi is playing this sort of very outlier style of football. The what are the upsides that we think he gets from having, in particular to this question, like an old school front two?
I mean, I think that's a really good question. I'm almost not answering it by saying that I saw something recently with Thierry Henry on Monday Night Football. I don't know if you guys saw that, where he actually noted how much he appreciates and respects Inzaghi's 3-5-2. And it's specifically in terms of having two up front. And he was asked about what the strengths were of that. And maybe it was in reference to how he liked to play with maybe a number 10 and bouncing off a Dennis Bergkamp or something like that. But the idea, I think, that in general, thinking that maybe a 3-5-2 or a 5-3-2 has its defensive sort of attributes, and maybe people think of it maybe more as a defensive setup, Henri has said, and you can see from the way that Inter are playing at the moment, and Inzaghi will be an advocate of, just how much more of an attacking strength it is, and having two up front can help with creating that front five, as Liam spoke about before.
I wonder as well if there's an aspect of it, John, that helps achieve what we've described as being a very mixed style of attacking play, or an ability to mix it up and thrive in both playing short where necessary, but also going long where necessary. You know, I think that the received wisdom in why many elite managers have taken a striker out of the front line is to bolster their defensive capabilities in the defensive zones of the pitch, but also for build-up purposes in many cases as well, in order to strengthen their ability to hold and build possession in deeper areas. Whereas if you're thinking about having a threat, playing the ball forward quickly when necessary in order to exploit teams that are coming onto you, then clearly two is better than one up there. And that sounds like a basic thing to say, but you know, with my EFL hat on, there has been a really nice resurgence of high quality front two players over the last few years, and not always playing for teams that just pump it long and hope for the best, but actually teams who are incredibly exciting, particularly in direct attacks and speedy attacks, because they have often two very athletic players. I think gone are the days really of the big man, little man combo, because big man can be pretty damn effective as well, and having that athleticism too.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
It's probably worth mentioning, and again, this is me looking for confirmation bias from my central midfielder to head coach theory, which I won't hear disproved. But Inzaghi, from what I've seen, was a centre forward in his playing days. So whether that, you know, again, contributes to players having a wanting a team that plays in sort of the image of how they were as a player, not sure being tied to sort of that front two, but wanting a team that can be quite sort of a attack focused or have that real capacity to be effective in that way. And he kept the same sort of 3-5-2 approach in his previous role at Lazio. So I think that's an interesting sort of trend running through this. Again, I didn't see an awful lot of that Lazio team. That might be explained by sort of the players and the quality that they have there. But I think it's definitely something that people will be intrigued by, I think, sort of projecting forward and saying, where might his future lie if it is beyond Inter? Is that something that might turn clubs off? Or is it a case of, we're massively overreading this, he's done this all the time because that suits the players that he's got, he's in the same league, that suits Serie A specifically. It might not be that he can't do it, it might just be that he doesn't.
Yeah, the resurgent of backs of fives, I think, is really interesting in elite football, because what a back five gives you is five players along the deepest line on the pitch, which allows you to have players at various points on that back line stepping forward, both in and out of possession. And I think that's super important in modern football, where there is so much flexibility. So, for example, if you're playing against a team where they are drifting players into half spaces between the lines, if you have a back five, you have the ability to just chase those players away and just track them, where if you're playing with a back four, you then start disrupting your back line to a point where you know you're losing the ability to defend well. But also in possession of the ball, Liam, you mentioned before, like the other week against Bologna, there was a centre-back to centre-back goal, which is formed by the fact that you have two outside centre-backs who are very good at carrying the ball forward or attacking the box. And then suddenly you're pulling the opposition defensive structure apart as well. And I think this is what we're starting to see with the resurgence of back fives in at the elite level. So I'm thinking Xabi Alonso's using back three, back five ideas. It gives you the ability then to start from deep, but push players up in any channel of the pitch that you want without that then necessarily weakening you from a defensive point of view or in build-up losing too many players to be able to control the ball. So I think we're going to start seeing more of these back five shapes in at the elite level with rather than being these sort of old school back fives, which is about trying to get as many players into the defensive line as possible, actually with the opposite opinion, the idea, which is to try and get players out of that back line forward as much as possible as well.
We speak about rest defence a fair bit on this pod, and I know it's one of John's favourite things, and is often focused around how a team can, you know, prevent chances or counterattacks even occurring when they're attacking, which is generally something Inter do really, really well. But also their rest attack, if you want to look at it on the flip side, of where they position players to actually exploit in transition. In Federico Di Marco, and especially Denzel Dumfries, who generally tend to be the first choice wing backs. Again, it might be slightly different. They've got Carlos Augusto, who can fill in really well on the left. I think Damian has played on the right as well. Two really, really quick players that get up to speed really, really quickly as well. And when they come up against a lot of 3-5-2s or teams that do push bodies on in wide areas, when they do sit deep, and as soon as they make those regains, they can straight away hit those wide areas because they've got two that tend to stay not completely on the last line. They'll come back and defend. Often their counters start when Thuram or Lautaro actually tackle a midfielder and that ball pops, and then straight away they'll have a wing back that instantly is gone sort of 10, 15 yards straight on the sprint, and that way they can then get in behind teams and sort of exploit them. It happened recently against Napoli, and it's just again another sort of layer that we speak about in terms of their attack. That's something we've seen in other leagues, in the Premier League, of counter-attacks now going up again as people have got the players with the individual capacity physically and technically to do it, but also as a result of how they might commit bodies in wide areas.
And again, this is all about flexibility. When you're playing a 5-3-2 shape, the worry is always like, where are you finding width in those sort of shapes? And that's what the flexibility gets for Inzaghi. He can push his wingbacks up super high. It doesn't always have to be that the centre midfielders are finding that width. You're not always constantly having to drag your midfield apart. There are routes and mechanisms whereby you can still get width, even with this, I guess, quite narrow shape in forward areas.
And they are absolutely phenomenal defensively as well. So can we try and highlight some of the contributing factors behind that? John, out of possession, ultra.
Yeah, well, it's flexibility again. It's all about this, the flexibility of this shape. If they want to, they can jump their wing backs really high to press opposition fullbacks. If they're playing a team where they want to be a little bit more reactive, they can have their wing backs sitting deeper and they're able to shuffle their midfield three across one side to the other. If the midfielder on one side goes, so let's say Barella on the right jumps up, there's an outside centre back on that side who can jump up to cover the player that Barella is leaving there if he is. And it just means that you're constantly able to respond to the ball moving from one side of the pitch to the other, because you're always having players jumping out of an overloaded back line into an underloaded midfield, and that's the flexibility that I'm talking about there. It's not just about being able to be super defensively solid in that back line. It's about being able to respond to what the opposition are doing when they're pulling your players out, so that you've still got cover in those areas as well. So yeah, for me, it's a really well-designed system which has the flexibility to respond to different scenarios and gives you the ability to play very aggressively, right? You can play with your centre midfielders jumping up onto fullbacks if you want, but also very reactively as well. So if you're up against an opposition where you think, oh, you know, they're going to cause us, like, for example, a front three, a very narrow front three with the two wide players who might drop in between the lines and look for space, you can deal with that really comfortably with Inter's system. And there's just a lot of really great players now at the elite level who want to play in that way. And Inter have this way of just being able to chase them away with their outside centre-backs without having to worry too much about what's going on in the line behind them. So yeah, just a fantastic like flexibility for me, which allows them to respond to what other teams are doing in a way that most, I think, other elite teams don't ever face at that level.
There's a great specific example of what John's referencing about bumping the wingbacks up to press against Napoli twice recently. Well, once at the start of the year in the Supercoppa, and again recently in Serie A, where admittedly they dropped points from 1-0 up, but the pressing scheme was sort of the same. They benefited a little bit because Osimhen missed the game, so having Raspadori meant they had a bit of a reduced threat in terms of, if they do push high, you know, that out ball or the channel chaser probably wasn't as high quality. But I think it's interesting how they stop, in terms of Napoli and Milan in particular, because their derby record, I think, currently is the best any side has ever had it in terms of consecutive wins. So the key players for Napoli when Osimhen isn't there is Kvaratskhelia, and for Milan it's Rafa Leao, which are a right-footed left-wingers who are at their best when they can go 1v1 and they've got space to go into. So they did exactly what John said. They pushed their wing-backs up high, and Inzaghi actually spoke about this after they won in Naples earlier on this season, saying that by pushing them up, it's better because the farther you keep Napoli from your own goal, the better it is for you defensively. And they then mix that by having the right centre-back would come round to cover the left-winger Kvaratskhelia in the press, and when that would get broken, played through, or in deeper defending situations, they drop into a back five. Damian, this time who was the right wing-back, he would drop deeper and stay on Kvaratskhelia, so they could then double up if Barea comes and joins him or the centre-back comes across. So it's knowing when to give time and space, and that, again, is how all this sort of manifests. It's not, they're not trying to get a set system, it's, when are we prepared to commit bodies and numbers forward when we press because we want to get regains? And then when they do get through it, there's enough respect to say, let's sit in and let's double up, triple up on the biggest threats out wide.
I mean, the guys outlined it perfectly there from a tactical perspective. I just want to add some more numbers to the story and show just how impressive they have been in terms of the numbers. So 10 shots conceded per 90 minutes in Serie A. So only Fiorentina have conceded fewer in Italy. And it's much in the same way that I spoke about it from an attacking perspective. It's the low quantity that they are conceding, but also the really low quality. And it speaks to both of the guys' points in terms of when they are a bit more reactive, of really being compact with those three in the middle, obviously the wing backs really tucking in, of just limiting to really low quality efforts. And their 0.07 XG per shot conceded is super low when you think about it. Only Juventus have conceded a lower average quality shot. So as I mentioned, really nicely mirroring the attacking perspective, they're conceding low volume and low quality, which is just as good. So being strong in both boxes is certainly, you know, helpful. To add to that, the shots that they are conceding, Jan Sommer is having a really strong shot-stopping season by the numbers as well. It's the best in the league, which can do nothing but help in that regard as well, just to add further sort of credence to that. But you know, all of the above just explains why they have only conceded 0.5 goals per 90, which for the simple mathematicians among us is a goal every other game, which is outstanding, and it is the best in the top five European leagues. So it speaks to what you said at the very start of this, Ali, that is just defensively phenomenal.
Somers had 17 league clean sheets this season, which is already the joint most by an interkeeper in the 3 points per win era, which I think is from the early or mid-90s in Serie A, which goes back to Julio Cesar and Semih Handanovic are the others to have that. And I think the record is 21 in Serie A. That's happened a few times in recent seasons. But looking at some of their sort of fixtures that they come onto, I think they've only got two more games against top half teams. They've got to play Milan at San Siro again, but they've got a lot of the bottom end teams to play. So you would really back him to, if not break that, definitely get close to it. And again, it will just be sort of add it to the collection of records that this Inter team might set. As you know, again, it's not just a goalkeeper's award, it's the defence, because as Mark says, and actually did a great point in a piece about sort of bad stats, is that there'll be games this season where Sommer won't have even faced a shot or had faced one or two shots. So that isn't just on him, but as a wider defensive award.
Mark, I've been waiting for a chance over the last few weeks to celebrate you and for you to kind of show off your new wheels. That is the playstyle wheels. This is amazing piece of data work that you and your colleagues at The Athletic have done. It's massively enhanced The Athletic's football writing offering with some fantastic data insights and great viz as well, as we know is crucial. Can you just give us a bit of an overview as to how you approach building what is essentially quite a new sort of data product within the space? So many different things that you can do with it, both giving a snapshot of a team's style in different phases of the game, but also tracking the change in style over time is a really neat feature, and also being able to compare their style to clubs across other leagues as well.
Yeah, I tried to sort of create something that was multifaceted, and I'll do my best to explain it, given that it is, I guess, intrinsically visual, but people can check it out on site if they wish to. It is something that, as you mentioned, is going to be an ongoing part of our suite. The guys have explained for Inter is just one example how varied a team style can be. It can be pragmatic at times where it is maybe reacting to the opposition. It can be proactive in other ways where you've got your clear principles. So I'm trying to do it based on style and not too much based on success. Essentially what I've done is break it down into defense, possession, progression and attack to try and keep it really nice and simple and create some metrics that are represented in football language and not looking at kind of abbreviations or anything that's too confusing, such that, you know, any reader can look at it and get a fairly clear idea at a glance as to what a team is looking to do. And what I've crucially tried to do is, in terms of the numbers, is not do it per 90 or whatever it may be. I've tried to clearly show it as a percentile. So for each team, it's as a percentile compared with the top seven European leagues. So the top five European leagues that we speak about widely, plus the Portuguese Primeira Liga and the Dutch Eredivisie. And yeah, I mean, we could talk through an example, obviously, with Inter as well, of just how strong their one of the metrics is chance prevention, which is simply their expected goals conceded per 90. And their percentile is the 98th percentile here, which we've just spoken about their strong defensive numbers. But in terms of expected goals conceded, Arsenal and Sporting Lisbon are just slightly better than this season, but super strong in that regard, which we've spoken about. And be interesting to get the guys' thoughts on this in terms of possession. Inter aren't known to be the most dominant on the ball in the way that we maybe associate with a Manchester City, and possession is one of the metrics that we include there, and then the 77th percentile. But one thing that they're particularly good at, which I think that, you know, John's already covered, is that they are really strong in terms of their press resistance. And I've got press resistance as one of the measures. And this is essentially how often the opponent is able to make a tackle per 100 passes that a team makes in the first two-thirds of the pitch. And for Inter, that's the best in Europe currently this season with the rotations that they have. And I think, yeah, it speaks to John's point about their ability to rotate, whether it is dropping midfielders into the back line, pushing the wing backs up, or just rotating the centre backs as well. So it shows the numbers match the tactical style that the guys have outlined. And that the third one is their progression and their attacking style more generally. I think it is interesting to show how much of a hybrid approach they have. And this is where you're sort of marrying up the numbers with what you see by eye, because if you were to look at it just in the numbers, it might seem that Inter are kind of middle of the road. As much as anything, you could think of it as a hybrid. Inter have the second most direct attacks in Serie A behind AC Milan. I think they mentioned that before. So they can counterattack with real pace and purpose. But the fact that they are middle of the road here suggests that, especially compared to last season, where their patient attack was really low, therefore their counterattacking style was really high, it does suggest that they're obviously able to mix it up in such a way that they are still dominant. You know, they'll still have more possession than the opponent. They can be dominant in periods where they want to be, and they'll turn the screw when they want to be. But when the situation arises, again, tactically, as the guys have spoken about, they can do that as well. And again, that speaks to the sign of an elite team, where they're able to mix it up and do both.
I guess that's one of the challenges of your job, of Johnson Liam's as well, trying to present data insights as clearly as possible for anyone to be able to understand, whether they are super data literate or not. But also try to explain aspects like you've just explained, where less doesn't equal worse and more doesn't equal better, right? There's a lot of teams on play style visualizations that look amazing because they have a very extreme style of play. And in some cases, that isn't always for the best when it comes to results. So that's where a team like Inter and this mixed style that we've talked about are interesting to me, you know, when we are using data and numbers to try and give a snapshot, try and give an overview. As I think is probably pretty clear on this episode and every week, I hope, we are interested in football tactics, sometimes more so than results and outcomes, because outcome bias is a plague when it comes to football analysis. But John, they have just been knocked out of the Champions League by Atletico. I refuse to say they lost to Atletico, because it was 2-2 after two legs, and Lautaro's penalty had some dodgy turf beneath it. But I guess what would you say to those that might use that to say maybe Inter aren't that good, maybe they're being a little overhyped to an extent?
I think there's some interesting things to consider, particularly from the Champions League, from Inter. And one of those things is that we've talked a lot about how good Inter are in terms of reactiveness. I personally would have some questions potentially when Inter I expected to be comfortable favourites. So if you go through the group stages of the Champions League, you see they had Real Sociedad, Benfica, and RB Salzburg in their group. Now they got they beat Salzburg both times, but they got draws with Benfica and with Sociedad, both of those fixtures as well, which is far from being a sort of dominant side and playing against dominant sides in Europe as well. And so I think that there is a question about those moments where you want your team to just squeeze the opposition. You want them to keep possession. You want to force them back into their own third and really dominate games in that way, in the way that we see teams like Manchester City, Arsenal doing, having the ability to make those games just completely one-sided. Obviously, Inter are not necessarily doing that. They are playing a lot of, you know, baiting the opposition forward, being able to play through the press, make these really quick transitions through wide areas and then hit their two strikers. And obviously, they're one of the best transition teams in the world. So I would say, yeah, the big question for me would be, okay, it's great for you to be super flexible, to play reactive as well as active football, but sometimes you do have to be active. Sometimes you do have to be the word that Mikel Arteta loves to use, which is dominant in possession and squeeze teams to death in that way. And I think with Inter, we don't necessarily get that a huge amount, which is why I think we've seen them be quite good in some cup competitions, because when they come up against some of the bigger opponents, they can play that reactive style, which gets them upside. But I think, yeah, in terms of like consistently having to squeeze oppositions, particularly high level oppositions, then I guess my question would be, is there a weakness here in this approach that doesn't really allow you to play in the way that most modern elite teams would?
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Just a quick focus on the manager himself, Simone Inzaghi, of course, somewhat in his brother's shadow as a player, Pippo Inzaghi, born offside, as Sir Alex Ferguson liked to say, but some goal scorer. Simone now certainly emerging from that shadow as a manager. He managed Lazio previously. He won the Coppa Italia with them and two Super Coppa Italianas. He's won two Coppa Italias and two Super Coppa Italianas with Inter so far, reached the Champions League final with such an impressive campaign last season, and now surely will add a Scudetto to that list with Inter. James Horncastle said recently that Inzaghi right now is being seen as the best exponent of Italian football. And that's exciting from looking at it through an English football lens, because we've had the pleasure, the delight of a lot of Italian football managers managing in the Premier League over the last few decades. I suppose my question is, do we think we will ever see him manage outside of Italy? And do we think he would be suited to managing in the Premier League?
I absolutely think he'd be suited. His track record is phenomenal. You don't win that many cups and do this well in a league, or you know, even the previous league seasons haven't been bad. They've been okay. I think their sort of gripe with it is that it's been, as we've mentioned, quite a competitive division. So to not go all the way and actually get to the, you know, position where you can challenge for it, and they've come close, I think, a couple of times. And then, you know, when Milan, your city rivals, your cousins have gone on and won it, then that, I imagine, jars even further. I see the points about sort of style, and John makes the point that he does clash with the way that a lot of coaches like to work. But then this is the biggest compliment, and people might take it as an insult. The closest manager in the Premier League I can currently think of to him is Thomas Frank at Brentford, with that approach of being flexible, being able to be disruptive against big teams. I'm not now suggesting he should go to Brentford. I think he can pitch himself way higher than that, as he's shown and as he's earned. We're looking now only the second time this season that the Inter have gone two games without winning, and that includes obviously a draw from 1-0 up in terms of being a head-on aggregate. And we've been in a season that's had, in the Premier League specifically, very few sackings, and we're going to see Jurgen Klopp leave at the end of the season. I think one can imagine, you know, with a good amount of reason, that might start a bit of a managerial merry-go-round in terms of whoever replaces him, whoever replaces his replacement at whatever club. Whether that means he comes to the Premier League, I don't know. I sort of said similarly about Alessandro Bastoni, and fairly got a bit of backlash about why would he leave a club that he's been so successful at. And for Bastoni, that's his childhood club. I don't believe that's the same for Inzaghi with his Lazio connections. But I think he's been very successful there. And then there is the thing of, you know, you shouldn't always move across, the grass isn't always greener, but on a very selfish tactical analytical level, he's a coach I really enjoy watching his teams, and would love to see him you know, on these shores, so to speak.
Well, there can be more basic reasons for player and managerial movement as well, Liam, and while it's not our area of expertise, Inter are in a remarkable and very uncertain and quite alarming financial situation. There's a fantastic piece from James Horncastle on the Athletic site from November, the title of which is Inter Milan, The Ticking Clock, a £287 million loan, record loss and silverware. That gives all the detail that you need about how they've got to this point. The upshot is, after incredible losses over the last few years, that there is a lot of cutting of the cloth that has been happening over the last year or two, and potentially will have to happen again. Horncastle also mentions that Inzaghi makes roughly half what his predecessor earned. So, you know, these are all interesting contextual bits when we're talking about Inzaghi's future. And Inter's immediate future will surely see a triumphant Scudetto. They've been such a fascinating team to hear about on the pod today. So just from me, a massive thank you to John McKenzie for joining us for his debut. Thank you, John.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I could have carried on talking for another hour, but yeah, I guess I have to be well behaved.
Passion and insight. That's what we love here. Thank you to Mark as well and your wonderful new playstyle wheels. And Liam, you finally got your full episode on Internazionale. Thanks for listening to this week's Athletic Football Tactics podcast. Do join us again next week and do head to theathletic.com for the best football writing on the internet, including Mark's wonderful new viz. Head to theathletic.com/tactics and you'll find yourself a discount on an annual subscription. And do join us again next week on the Athletic Football Tactics podcast.
The Athletic.